right now they're working on getting a barge and a landing craft out there to try and get the vessel up, remove the threat of pollution.
A vessel and barge sink on the Nooshigak River. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 11th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska natives in the Bering Strait can once again visit relatives in Russia.
Qualified Native Alaskans can travel visa-free under this agreement that is called the Bering Straits Agreement.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Alaska Marine Conservation Council reminds Alaskans to choose local, sustainably caught seafood this summer. More information at akmarine.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Marine Conservation Council.
The federal government wants to push ahead with its plan to designate a huge swath of the Arctic as critical habitat for endangered polar bears over the objections of the State of Alaska and trade associations. Justice Department lawyer Robert Stockman today urged appeals court judges to overturn a lower court's decision rejecting the plan. Stockman says the critical habitat designation of an area larger than California was as specific as it could be to protect polar bears based on the best available science. About 95% of the designated habitat is ocean. The other 5% is along the northern Alaska coast. U.S. District Court Judge Ralph Beislein in 2013 said geographical features needed by polar bear females for creating dens and giving birth were not shown to be present on much of the land designated as critical habitat. A 45-foot vessel and barge overturned and sunk in the Nooshigak River on Sunday. The tug and barge operated by Anchorage-based Ridge Contracting was hauling scrap cars from the village of New Stuyahok downriver to Dillingham. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
The vessel Challenger with two on board went down Sunday around 3 p.m. Both on board are fine with no reported injuries. Exactly what caused the sinking is still unknown. Petty Officer Patrick Brown with Coast Guard Sector Anchorage is overseeing the initial investigation of the downed vessel Challenger.
It's approximately 45 feet long. It had a barge called the Barge Number 1 in side tow when both of them sunk. They were carrying some scrap metal from recycled cars, no oil or hazmat, as far as cargo was concerned, on board them at the time. And the Challenger has a max capacity of 300 gallons for fuels on board, and the responsible party is reporting that there's 100 gallons of diesel on board at the time that the vessel sunk.
The Coast Guard flew an aircraft survey of the wreckage Monday, noting that it is still intact and overturned, as other witnesses on the river have reported. Petty Officer Brown says it's hard to tell what amount of pollution may have occurred.
They spotted some sheen about a mile from the vessel, but we couldn't neither confirm nor deny that it's coming directly from the vessel at this point.
The barge was hauling scrapped vehicles from New Stuyahok down the river to Dillingham. New Stuyahok's IGAP coordinator tells KDLG News those vehicles had been drained of oil, gas, and freon, which was recycled in New Stuyahok and was not on board the barge. A resident tells KDLG News Ridge Contracting is currently working on the landfill road in New Stuyahok and took the scrap car removal as a separate contract. Petty Officer Brown says Ridge is responsible for salvaging the vessel and had been taking measures to see that happen Monday.
Right now they're working on getting a barge and a landing craft out there to try and get the vessel up, remove the threat of pollution, and basically get it out of the way of any business that needs to take place on the Nooshigak.
Anchorage-based Ridge Contracting has not responded to KDLG requests for comment. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
KDLG reports the EPA and Coast Guard confirm that as of today, the EPA has jurisdiction over that waterway and will take over monitoring the cleanup and salvage, and that Ridge Contracting is taking appropriate steps to begin those efforts. Visa-free travel for Alaska natives with ties across the Bering Strait has been reinstated after being banned for more than 3 years. KNOM's Emily Russell has more.
The Bering Straits Regional Commission says travel restrictions for Alaska natives to Chukotka have been lifted, leaving many with relatives on the Russian side of the strait feeling relieved. Since time immemorial, natives on both sides of the Bering Strait have traveled freely between what is now Alaska and Chukotka. Political egos and ensuing conflicts after World War II put a stop to this fluid exchange of people and goods. The director of the FBI at the time, J. Edgar Hoover, ordered the border closed in 1948, urging that, quote, U.S. national security interests should outweigh the interests of local Eskimos. John Wakii of Sivunga remembers the decades-long border closure.
60 years of closure, the Cold War was not good for us. And then to make it difficult for our people several years ago, you know, it's tough. We need to be able to go back and forth. It's a God-given right.
Relations eventually thawed and the border was reopened in 1989. That same year, the U.S. and the Soviet Union signed an agreement reinstating visa-free travel for eligible natives on both sides of the strait. That 1989 agreement was curtailed 3 years ago when all travelers, including Alaska natives with ties to Chukotka, were required to purchase and apply for a visa to travel across the strait. Now Vera Metcalf with the Bering Straits Regional Commission says the agreement was updated just last month.
Qualified Native Alaskans can travel visa-free under this agreement that is called the Bering Straits Agreement. And the visits in Chukotka are limited to 90 days as defined in the agreement.
Despite enthusiasm for the change, various border closures since 1948 have made it more difficult for natives with ties on both sides of the strait. Wagee is frustrated that international disputes infringe on their right to travel.
I don't think that people that have ties to Chukotka or Alaska need to be used as pawns.
With visa-free travel reinstated, Wagee looks forward to visiting family across the strait and hosting more cultural exchanges between natives from Alaska and Chukotka in the years to come.
That's KNOM's Emily Russell in Nome. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a now famous rock band returns home to play the state fair for their Alaskan fans.
It's like a scene from Footloose. It's like, since they don't get a ton of it, they hit it hard. And they just, you know, when you see somebody dance like they've never heard music before, it's an amazing thing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Alaska Attorney General Craig Richards has rejected the proposed sale of a Cook Inlet natural gas processing facility that's targeted for expansion to produce more gas for Fairbanks. In an August 3rd letter to Hillcorp affiliate Harvest Pipeline Company, Richards formally turns down a sale agreement under which the Fairbanks Natural Gas-owned Titan LNG facility at Point McKenzie would be sold to Harvest. Richards takes issue with agreement provisions, including one that calls for the sale of LNG from the plant at a fixed price, he says, could result in Fairbanks consumers paying too much if market gas prices tank. The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority is moving ahead with purchase of Fairbanks Natural Gas as part of the Interior Energy Project. Richards asked that the state corporation be able to buy LNG transportation infrastructure proposed to go to Harvest with the LNG plant. The state also wanted a commitment from Harvest that it would expand the Point McKenzie plant to meet Fairbanks' demand. In written response to the state's requested changes, Harvest President Sean Colasa refuses to adjust the sale agreement, saying meeting the state's demands would create additional risk in a deal he describes as providing a very small estimated profit margin. Attendance was thin at yesterday's Juneau Assembly meeting, but at least one parent and one prospective child care provider in the audience were elated. As KTOO's Jeremy Shea reports, the Assembly passed an ordinance significantly relaxing land use restrictions on child care facilities, which are in very high demand.
The lack of child care in Juneau has been a shock for Abigail Capistani and her 19-month-old toddler. My husband and I moved here about a month ago, and we've been on a waiting list since February with no end in sight.
She moved from Louisiana, where, while she was pregnant, she signed up for childcare at a big church-run center. She says the daycare even had webcams so she could check in on her son remotely.
So then coming here, it's like, oh, there's very limited options.
She told the Assembly if she knew it would be this hard to get childcare, she and her Coast Guard husband probably wouldn't have come. That could change soon, as the Assembly went through the motions to adopt the ordinance.
Assembly action, Mr. Jesse Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move approval of Ordinance Serial Number 2015-32, and I ask for unanimous consent.
Do we have unanimous consent? We have unanimous consent, so this ordinance has...
Isra Keiko Gehring was beaming in the audience with a huge grin, fists clenched in a quiet victory. It was an ordinance she began lobbying for months ago after her plan to open a nursery school was stymied.
Currently in the code, schools and churches are allowed to operate in any residential zone, but daycares are not.
She and her husband had bought an old church to convert to the nursery school.
We weren't allowed to operate, and we wanted to change that, so I called the assembly members.
She says that was back in November. When the ordinance she lobbied for goes into effect, the key land use restriction that blocked her will be out of the way. Keiko Gehring already has business cards made up that say Gehring Nursery School. She hands me one, which catches Abigail Capistani's eye. She asks for one, too.
Yeah, are you going to be accepting applications for toddlers?
We are. That's all we accept as toddlers.
In Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea.
A Southeast Health provider has adopted what may be the most progressive parental leave policy in Alaska. At least two experts say they don't know of another employer in the state with a comparable benefit. As KTOO's Lisa Fu reports, the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium's policy isn't as far-reaching as the Netflix new one-year paid leave policy, but it may start a trend.
Anne Stepton is due to deliver her fourth child in February. She and her husband had already decided she'd only take 2 weeks off from her payroll job at Search.
Because I didn't think we could afford to be off any longer.
Then she went into work one day and that plan drastically changed.
You can see me getting emotional. I was like, oh my God, it was such a blessing.
Search's new parental leave policy lets Stepton take 8 paid weeks off instead of using her accrued leave.
Having that in place does give me more of a relaxed feeling to prepare emotionally more or less for the baby rather than stressing about the finances.
And that's exactly what Search executives hoped the new policy would do. Peggy Kadlik is interim head of human resources.
We want that family to be, you know, really focusing on the new child, the new addition to their family, and to not have to worry about any of the other issues. It's an important time of bonding.
Search has about 650 employees in communities throughout Southeast Alaska. Most are concentrated in Juneau and Sitka. Kadlik says the health organization wants its employees to have work-life balance.
We believe our employees that are healthier, happier, will be here at work more frequently, provide the better kind of service into our community, and at the end, saves money.
Kadlik says people who take an active role in health and families have less health issues.
If our employees are out less for medical reasons, our costs are reduced, and we can transfer those dollars to programs to help them as well.
Dan Robinson is head of research and analysis for the State Department of Labor. He says the agency doesn't have any research on paid parental leave in the state. That could change. The department has applied for a federal grant to look into it.
It's very possible that there will be state legislation, that a legislator will say, we want to require employers to pay for parental leave. We want to make that paid. In that case, those questions could likely come our direction.
At Search, parents of new children can still access 12 weeks of family medical leave after the 8 weeks of paid parental leave. Anne Stepton isn't sure if she'll dip into it.
I haven't thought that far yet. 8 weeks is a blessing compared to the two that I was planning on doing.
She says she'll start with that and see how it goes. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
New York-based investors are now majority owners of the Raven Air Group, an airline that serves a broad area of rural Alaska. J.F. Lehman and Company, a group of private equity investors active in aerospace and maritime businesses, recently announced the new ownership structure. Longtime Alaska aviator Bob Hadukovich and his family, who previously owned half of the company that operated Raven, are now the only Alaska owners. Jim Tweedo and Mike Hagelin are part owners of the three airlines operating under the Raven name, Corvus, Hagelin, and Frontier. Raven has a fleet of more than 70 planes flying to 100 destinations throughout the state. Alaska Business Monthly ranked Raven the 22nd largest company in the state last year by its $160 million in revenue.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Pacific University is still accepting applications for the fall 2015 semester for their Master of Business Administration program. APU offers personalized education grounded in hands-on, real-world experiences to prepare graduates to be leaders in their communities. More at 1-800-ALASKA-U or alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
The ferry Aurora is out of service a week earlier than expected. A small crack was found last week in its hull. The Coast Guard ordered repairs to be made before it resumes passenger service on its Prince William Sound route. Alaska Marine Highway spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the Aurora was sent to Ketchikan Shipyard, where it was scheduled for other work.
The vessel was going out of service on August 14th to enter its annual overhaul period. And because of that, knowing that we had to do some extensive repairs to this area that the crack was noticed in, we sent the vessel to Ketchikan to have those repairs done.
The 38-year-old ship is scheduled to resume service in October. It's not yet known what caused the crack. Woodrow says the crack did not immediately compromise vessel safety. The Aurora connects Whittier, Cordova, and Valdez. It sometimes sails southeast routes, mostly filling in for its sister ship, the Leconte. It carries up to 250 passengers and 33 vehicles. A recent Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development report puts tourism's impact on Southeast Alaska into numbers. The Alaska Economic Trends report calls Southeast the epicenter of cruise ship traffic in the state, and that's the main driver of the visitor industry. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
And so what cruise ship are you on?
The Celebrity Solstice.
Have you been to Alaska before?
No. But I visited all the other 49 other states, so this is the last one. Save the best for last.
That's Floridian tourist Martin Levinson. He was one of the first cruise ship visitors to Skagway early this summer. Levinson is one of about a million people who visit Southeast each summer, most arriving on cruise ships.
Tourism is one of the big parts of Southeast economy, but I don't think there's enough real analysis of what impact tourism really has to our region.
Connor Bell is the Department of Labor economist who authored the recent report using statistics from 2014. He found that there were about 4,600 tourism-related jobs in Southeast, making up about 11% of the region's summer economy. The report says Southeast's economy is highly seasonal, and most of that increase is tied to tourism. From May to September of 2014, there was an average of about 7,000 more jobs each month than the rest of the year. More than half were in visitor-related industries. Tour guides are the most common of those jobs, followed by waiters and waitresses, and then retail salespeople. The highest paying of visitor-related jobs are captains, mates, and pilots of water vessels, earning an average of about $17,000 a summer. Visitor-related jobs are especially concentrated in three Southeast towns. Skagway, Juneau, and Ketchikan see the biggest economic impact from tourism. Bell found that Juneau has about 1,700 jobs directly related to summer tourism, Ketchikan has about 1,000, and Skagway has around 800. Of those three, Skagway stands out.
The impact of tourism should be, you know, apparent to any Skagway resident. For one thing, the summer employment for tourism exceeds the year-round population, and so there's a huge influx of people. Over half the jobs during summer are in tourist industries, and that's only counting direct tourism jobs.
53% of Skagway's summer jobs are directly visitor-related. That's compared to 12% in Ketchikan and 9% in Juneau. The towns that have less steady or no cruise ship traffic at all see much less of an economic impact from tourism. Last summer, Sitka had 340 visitor-related jobs, Haines had about 200, Petersburg saw 50, Wrangell 40, Prince of Wales Island 150, and Yakutat fewer than 10. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
Getting an internationally successful rock band to play in Alaska is tough. But when the Alaska State Fair gets underway later this month, one of the performing groups will be playing for a hometown crowd. John Gourley and Zach Carruthers formed Portugal the Man in 2006. Both were raised in the Matsu Valley and never dreamed they would eventually be signed to a major record label and playing some of the largest stages in the world. But the road wasn't easy. Carruthers, who plays bass in the band, says he still remembers their early struggles.
We bought a minivan, we got a rice cooker from Salvation Army and a giant bag of rice, and we would sleep. We would pull off into truck stops along the freeway. We would unplug the soda machine, plug in our rice cooker, and eat on the sidewalk and then do our dishes in the bathroom. And that's kind of how we lived for a while. It was unbelievably poor. Those first tours, I think I ate off about $10 a week. We got one hot item at like a Whopper Jr. or a dollar cheeseburger once a week, I'm pretty sure.
You've definitely paid your dues, and I'm guessing that your food budget now is a little better than the dollar menu at McDonald's.
Definitely. We get value meals. We get all the meals.
Is it true that Mike D from the Beastie Boys is helping you with this newest album?
Sort of. We have been recording a lot with Mike D, and it's interesting. That's kind of how John and I became friends, was over talking about the Beastie Boys and listening to that. So he's obviously a hero of mine. The Beastie Boys are like the Beatles to me. And yes, we've made friends with him, and we have been making music with Mike D. We're not sure if it's going to be the next record or an EP or a separate, just a cool art project that we're going to do. But yes, we have been making music with him, and it's been pretty amazing. If you had told me when I was in high school, years later, I'd be hanging out with Mike D and making music, I just frankly wouldn't believe you.
How does Alaska find its way into your music?
Oh, every way. I mean, growing up there is so special. You have such a unique perspective. Just the imagery always gets into our lyrics and just always inspires us for whatever way. John and I, when we're writing music, even when we're not talking about lyrics, when it's just sounds or moods, we always speak very like cinema terms. You know, we're very visual thinkers, and every sound comes with an image and a color and a mood and a feeling. From all just the weird movies that we watch, and two, from growing up in Alaska. You know, not a lot of people down here can understand what it's like to, you know, go outside on your back deck and watch the northern lights at midnight and in 35 below degree weather. And that's great that my, you know, best friend and coworker, we can talk about stuff like that, and we can add those kind of feelings. So it's definitely, it's all over our music and will be forever.
Does it sort of help you feel grounded when you come back to Alaska and kind of reconnect with your roots?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We'll go back and build houses with John's family and stuff like that. We don't really have that problem in our band, you know. I go back home and I go fishing in the same streams. I go drink at the Mugshot in Wasilla, and it's the same old thing. And I love that. And that's what's it keeps us grounded in a way. It's just nice to remember that. And I personally miss Alaska a lot.
And I also want to tell you that while we've been talking, there's a bunch of fans are gathering in the control room now listening to you and I talk.
Oh, nice.
A lot of your Alaska fans are here. You've managed to come back and perform in Alaska almost every year since you left. Why is it important to fit Alaska into your tour schedule?
That's where we're from. We got to represent. It's definitely like no other place. Playing there is amazing and terrifying and everything. So that's where we're from. We really have to prove it there. Sometimes we go to Alaska and there's people dancing like it's like a scene from Footloose. It's like, since they don't get a ton of it, they hit it hard. And they just, you know, when you see somebody dance like they've never heard music before, it's an amazing thing. It's like watching a toddler take their, you know, first bite of ice cream ever and just seeing their eyes. It's a beautiful thing.
So, Zach, okay, what's with the weird names? The weird band name, weird album name, Satanic Satanists, Waiter, You Vultures. Where does this come from?
It's every one of them comes from a different place. Satanic Satanist, oddly, is about John's childhood growing up in Alaska, being out in Willow with not a lot of people around. You know, when you're watching shows like when you're watching Mr. Rogers and you don't even know what a neighbor is, like his closest neighbor is like 5 miles away. So we felt like, you know, Alaska is, and people there is, it's a lot of outcasts and doing that to yourself. So figure the Satanic Satanist is a representation of like the most outcast ever.
Well, Zach, thanks so much. And it'll be great to have you come back to Alaska and play here. Take care.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Zach Carruthers is the bass player and co-founder of Portugal the Man. The band takes the stage at the State Fair on September 2nd. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Emily Russell in Nome, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jeremy Shea, Ed Schoenfeld and Lisa Fu in Juneau, Ben Matheson in Bethel, and Emily Files in Haines. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. Increase the earning power with a Bachelor of Business Administration degree with a Human Resource Management emphasis from the UAS School of Management. Details at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.